the event that you have limited or no power, limited or no influence, and very little, if any, privilege, approach the conflict from the lens of someone with an external locus of control where you are finding support? Welcome back to the Fast Forward Podcast. We are continuing our conversation about conflict management. And today I wanted to start to introduce the concept of how to manage conflict, so actual strategies for managing conflict in your life. I am going to use examples that are primarily related to your professional life, but keep in mind these are easily applicable to any part of your life, whether it is with loved ones, colleagues, strangers, dates, boos, anybody that you might have communication with and potentially experience a conflict. The first target that I wanted to address with the strategy piece, now that we've talked about inner conflict, is knowing your locus of control. I wanted to start here because, as I talked about in the first episode, how we approach the idea of winning or losing in a conflict is really going to determine how long we're willing to manage conflict, if we're willing to even step in the ring at all, if we are willing to hear and really listen to other people. And locus of control came up for me. It was almost just intuitive. And the idea of a locus of control is a psychological concept that was developed by Julian Rotter. And it is essentially the gauge along a spectrum of the amount of control someone feels over their life's events. And so typically you at the extreme end would have an external locus of control, meaning your life is controlled by fate, other people, a higher power, something outside of yourself. And at the other extreme, you would have an internal locus of control, which is that you yourself are fully in control of everything that happens in your life. And then, of course, again, it's a spectrum. So you move at points along that external versus internal. And as a part of the studies, you know, this is where identity becomes important, because if you are part of what would be considered a dominant or majority group, you probably have deeper sense of control over your life. So you're going to lean more toward internal because you experience more power and privilege and influence in life versus folks who might be marginalized and they have more of an external locus of control, which is that other people are pulling the strings and controlling things, and I have limited influence and control over my life. This is important in conflict management because when you misjudge and miscalculate, or I'll say misplace your locus of control, you can end up causing more harm than good. In the workplace in particular, this is important because a lot of conflict management relies on you having both power and influence to resolve the conflict in a way that ensures that if you don't win completely, you can at least experience some win, right? Because it could be that it's all win on you, some wins, which is would be like an all-win solution for everyone, or you lose completely. In the event that you have limited or no power, limited or no influence, and very little, if any, privilege, you probably are going to need to approach the conflict from the lens of someone with an external locus of control where you are finding support, versus if you have a lot of power and or a lot of influence and or a lot of privilege in your workplace setting, you probably can get away with internal locus of control because you know you can pull the strings. I don't think that there is a right or wrong answer here. Where I want to offer support with the strategies is to help you avoid harming others. And I say that because we don't always have a lot of control over what is preferred at jobs. So, for example, I've talked a lot about this job that I worked in social services toward the beginning of my career. And I was the youngest. I was probably the most educated, or at a certain point, would have been the most educated because I was in grad school then. I was new to the industry, new to the city. So I had very little privilege, very little power, and very little influence. My coworkers, they treated me like I was a child because I kind of was to them. And I had to find alliances quickly in order to get things done because the burden of responsibility on me required me to have more power, influence, and privilege than I had. And if I did not find and build alliances with people who did have power and or privilege and or influence at my job, I quite literally could not do my work and I couldn't have any positive relationships. So I ended up building an alliance with someone. No, I ain't gonna say who it was. Maybe that'll come up on another episode, but I ended up building an alliance with someone, two people, in fact. One of the people had a lot of influence and a lot of privilege. And then the other person had a lot of power and a lot of privilege. And between those two people, they helped me to get a lot of stuff done. But along the way, I had a whole bunch of bumps. I mean, I was constantly staying in tune with people. I think I told y'all before about the person who would be still in the books. I had, our clients who would come in and they would be running all over me. It was a mess for a while. But through that almost like hazing experience, I learned the importance of when to give in an argument. So to be fair, most of the time, and I'm talking about like 80% to 90% of the time, I was factually correct. So what I was asking people to do, what I was setting as a boundary, my rules, all that stuff, it was factually correct. But just because it was factually correct, in the grand scheme of the overall workflow, I had to learn to give a lot more because the rigidity that I set up, not only did that cause the conflict, but it led to third and fourth degree consequences that made it more difficult for everyone to thrive. And remember, I talked in the first episode about those consequences, measuring consequences appropriately, making sure that you have the right mindset about how far and deep something could go. So I'll give an example. The rule was orientation. So I was responsible for orientation, testing, and job readiness training, which in this five-step process were steps 1, 3, and 5. So I hit the beginning, the middle, and the tail end for these people to get services that they was looking for. The rule was orientation start at 9 o'clock, and you're not supposed to be able to come in late. I think it was a 5-minute grace period, but if you come in after 9:05, you're not supposed to be able to come in. Now, for me, number one, I just want to follow the timeline. But also, if you let one person come in late or two people come in late and somebody else, and you let them come in, and then somebody else tries to come in and you tell them no, child, it used to result in actual fights. People would be threatening folks. Like, it used to get off the chain. I told you it was social services. So this was like a madhouse every day, and not because people were just inherently bad. It was the time. This was the height of the Great Recession, and people were losing jobs left and right. People were losing housing. They needed help right away. Folks are just on edge and stressed out. And then also, folks just have a mindset towards social services that it's like, this is trifling, this ghetto, it's no decorum. So there were just a lot of things at play. Again, even outside of myself, but I got this process. So I, to save my own sanity, to preserve folks' safety, because when I say people used to be coming in there, turn it up, like people used to be coming in there, turn it up. And where orientation took place, it was like the back of the office, and you would almost have to be screaming at the top of your lungs for people to even hear you back there. So if something popped off, like it literally would just be me, and nobody was coming back there to check on me. So I was like, look, I gotta do what I gotta do. So it's just a hard stop. Everybody is out of there, at 9:05 if you don't come by that time. So I would have coworkers that would constantly try to sneak people in that they wanted to work with. And again, it would cause all these problems. So at first my thing was like, no, you can't come. And then again, conflict, fighting. And then eventually I said to stop and think. I'm like, okay, what's really going on? So I went to the person. Remember, I said it was somebody with privilege and power, and then somebody with influence and privilege. So eventually, I was talking to the person with influence, because the person with power pretty much was like, well, you say they can't come in, they can't. But then that person would play both sides. It was crazy. So the person with influence one day told me, they were like, look, it ain't worth it for you to be fighting with folks saying they people can't come back. Just make a rule that their counselor has to walk them back. If they cool with them coming late and they miss information, don't answer questions after orientation is done. Tell them they go ask their counselor, since their counselor was cool with them coming late, and require that the counselor walk them back so it don't look like it's just you letting people in. And I was like, oh, okay. Because the reality was, I had a script that I had to follow. So I'm saying the same thing every single day. And once I get going, like, I'm not paying attention to who coming in and who not really. It really was just a point of, if I let this person in, somebody else gonna turn up and go crazy. And so I was like, all right, bet. And I started doing that. And first of all, it reduced the number of people that they would tell they could come late, because the counselor would be in the middle of working and they didn't feel like walking people back. And for the people who they did feel like walking back, then they would be on the hook of like, well, you giving preferential treatment, and clients started reporting them. So now I'm off the hook. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a good solution. How this relates to conflict management and locus of control is that I knew that I could control my response, right? So I have control over if I say somebody can come in, if I'm there on time to start the presentation, if I make sure people got all of their handouts, et cetera. But I was miscalculating the external locus of control's impact on me, because I would let my coworkers get me so riled up that then I couldn't even focus when I'm doing my work. So by releasing my responsibility for a client's anger and frustration and feelings of, not being preferred, or feelings of bias, and putting it where it should be, which is on the people who are taking the wrong action, I saved my sanity, my attitude, and really my reputation, because then I was able to get really high marks. They used to send, because it was a city contract, so they used to send secret shoppers. So it'd be random people that the city assigned to come sit in. And like I said, it was a script. So if I missed a slide, or if I didn't discuss certain programs and things like that, like our center would get in trouble. And that was all on me. And nobody else would get dinged for that, because again, I'm doing orientation. And so I would be killed, y'all. My marks was so high, like consistently. I was so proud of myself, man. I used to be killing it at that job. And when I released that need to control all of these pieces, then I was able to focus on the most important parts of what I had to do. So similarly, when you're thinking about locus of control and conflict management, control what really matters to and for you, right? So if in my case, let's say similar to my case, where you have a coworker who is purposely doing things that create friction for your job, is there a way that you can lean on someone or involve someone with privilege and or power and or influence to say, hey, here's how I'd like to clarify roles? That role clarity is really what's at the heart of the frustration. Here's how we can clarify roles. Here is the chain of responsibility. Here are the notification points, the communication steps that we should take. That hopefully will create visibility, like it did in my case, so that even if it doesn't fix these other people's behavior, it will at least create hyper visibility of who is actually the problem. Now, here's the other side to this. I had to also realize that, and the person with power told me this. He was like, he used to call me kiddo all the time. So this is the big boss of the center. He was like, kiddo, you ain't always gonna work here. He was like, I know you, I could see it. He was like, you hungry, you know, you are motivated, you educated, you young. Because at the time, I think I was probably like 25 or something like that. I mean, I was like relatively young. This is a long time ago. And he was like, you ain't always going to work here. He was like, but while you're here, there are some things that you can learn. He was like, the other folks here, they in this. They always going to work. If it ain't for this company in this industry, some of them because they love it, some of them because they don't have nowhere else to go. Someone because they just feeling stuck and so they cool with being stuck. But that's not you. So he was like, I can't let you behave like this because I expect more from you because I know where you headed. And I remember when he first said it, I was mad because I'm like, well, you letting them do that? But after a few months, I got it. And it was so clear where it was like, at a certain point, like when I thought I wanted to stay in that industry, I was like, I want to run a center like this. If I crash out and get a reputation of being a hothead or rude, like this is a small network, right? People talk, people know each other, people, you know, tell stories. So I could be ruining my career path. But even if I go someplace else and work in government or even just stay here in the city, like people talk, it's not worth it. Like in the grand scheme of my life plan. So now we're looking back at internal locus of control. In the grand scheme of my life plan, career plan, this is a small blip. But if I work this blip right, I'll be able to put it behind me eventually and just extract nuggets and keep going like nothing ever happened. Instead of crashing out at folks who have hit their stop point. And this was no shade to them because first of all, it was very important work to the community. It's skilled work. Like it mattered. And a lot of my coworkers were very good at what they did. They just had shady ways. You know what I'm saying? They just shady sometimes, but they was cool. They was good at what they did. And so when he told me that, that changed my perspective and I started to calm down about a lot of things. And just like he said, I mean, I went from working in social services to then working in the public sector. I worked in government in multiple places for years. Then I went to the private sector. And I mean, I have to tell people that I used to work in social services. Like folks don't even believe it because it just feels so misaligned with the way my career evolved. He was right. All that stuff was crashing out. Like I have to think back and reflect to make myself remember certain things that happened because it just seemed like such a small blip. That's really the parting thought that I want to leave with you about this locus of control conversation is that when you're managing conflict and you're assessing your locus of control, remember that yes, it is a local locus of control, meaning it's localized to that issue, but it's also a part of a larger, longer story. And how you assess your locus of control should be contextualized in the longer story. It doesn't mean that you always have to be dating. It doesn't mean that you always have to compromise. Sometimes you might need to push for more collaboration or for that competing approach. Some things you might just want to all out avoid. It's like, oh, okay, you want to holler and yell at that? That's cool because you know, hey, I'm planning to relocate and completely change careers next year because I'm finishing a certification or I'm finishing the degree. Y'all can have it, right? In some cases, you might say, child, I'm getting ready to retire. I ain't about to be arguing back and forth with you, right? Your motivations are your motivations. But in order to appropriately assess your longer story, you got to have a strategy and a plan. So really, when you find yourself experiencing conflict, especially in the workplace, before you even choose what action you want to take a step back and say, what's my plan and how does this professional experience fit into that plan? Is this meant to just be a little short-term blip, or is this something that is an integral stop, either because of the length of time I'm going to be here or the impact on my career or who I'm going to meet or what I should accomplish here? And then let that guide you to how you manage conflict. So again, assess that locus of control. Internal being, I have total control. That's the one extreme. And then on the other extreme with external, it is completely up to fate, higher powers, other people. Most of us will fall somewhere in the middle. What does that middle look like for you? Let me know down in the comments. And of course, be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And I will catch you in the next one. Bye.